This is a replay of the Thursday night, July 27th WGN show. We started right at 10. If you don't hear yourself on it, it's because you didn't call. I hope you'll rectify that soon. We're live Monday through Thursday evenings from 10 to 1 Central. Dial 888-876-5593. My toll-free number from OneVoip for the world's best customer service. It's OneVoip. Check them out at the number 1-VOIP.com. You'll be really glad you did.
Direct from the edge of the lunatic fringe, it's the Raleigh James Show.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. Three big hours to spend together tonight, and I hope you'll join me. 888-876-5593. 888-ROLLYE. And if all else fails, yes, I've got a whole crop of new tabloids, actually. This one from a couple weeks ago, now that I think about it. The Examiner. I'm not sure why they mailed it to me, because I no longer subscribe, but I guess it was an enticement to subscribe again. And so I have state by state the animal most likely to kill you. Now, normally I probably would just gloss over this, yeah, realizing that it's a slow news week and they couldn't find any celebrity for the centerfold. But then I saw, in Illinois, the animal most likely to kill you. Yes, it's the zombie coyote. Oh, I kid you not. And of course, you probably know that's what they call the rabid canines. And the zombie coyote is most likely to do you in Illinois. And it's interesting. Dogs in a number of states, man's best friend, apparently will turn on you in several states. I assume these are just statistics, obviously. And the reality is you're not likely to be killed by any animal. Now, I say this for sure. Because of the states, let me find them here, that were just so out there. I believe that it was Oklahoma. Yeah. In Oklahoma, you're most likely to be killed by a tiger. That's right, the Bengal kind, yes. Obviously not found in the wild of Oklahoma, we don't think, but they have a habit of escaping from zoos and private owners. Yes, tornadoes or faulty fences. So if you're going to be done in by an animal in Oklahoma, it's probably going to be, yes, a Bengal tiger. All right, then. And but probably the most surprising, although I got to tell you, with Illinois, zombie coyotes has a certain ring to it. But probably the most surprising to me. And it came up in several states. Kansas, well, two of them anyway. Well, three, actually. Iowa, Kansas, or Nebraska. You're most likely to be killed by a cow. Yeah. I'm not 100% sure. I guess it's just blunt force trauma, given the size of the beast, but cows. So there you have that. Yes, it's come to this. We're reading the tabloids again. 888-876-5593 if you want to change the subject. It was surprising the amount of dogs, actually, but then again, dog bites can be lethal and usually aren't. And I would assume, especially from the aforementioned Bengal tigers, that we're not talking about a number of deaths, but you're unlikely to be killed by an animal at all based on this. In Tennessee, however, brown recluse spiders. Yeah. Now that is scary. I tell you, they're just about the worst thing I think you can encounter. Florida, well, no surprise there. It's the deadliest animal on the planet, if you want to call it an animal. Mosquitoes. And, of course, the diseases they spread are legendary. So in Florida, yes, it's the mosquito that will absolutely do you in. And if it doesn't, it'll feel like that anyway with the amount of bites you're going to get. So 888-876-5593, just a little preview. But we have this week's edition of the Examiner, the Globe, and the Inquirer. Yeah. So plenty to discuss. Or if it's on your mind, I'll make sure it's on mine. 888-876-5593. I'll play a couple of your requests, the ones I liked. And, I'll tell you what, we've got a few that are just terrific. And my thanks to Karen from Hyde Park for those wonderful impressions requests. So we'll get one of those on. And, yes, got a mild complaint that did we have to wait for Gene Chandler to die to play him? Hell no, I love playing Gene Chandler, and we'll at least get something on by Gene tonight as well. So we'll pick it up right there. And we've got Ryan Seacrest's Secret Life Revealed. Yeah. Is there anybody who cares? Well, undoubtedly someone. It's a cover story, and it sold the Examiner to somebody. Harry and Meghan trial separation? No, what a shock. Yeah, or not. So plenty to discuss, and maybe something of substance too, but not real substance, because that's not what we're about. We'll just have a good time, hopefully, with you on WGN Radio. WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. Well, that's his signature song, and actually, when it comes to hits, it's his only song in the U.S. Daryl Banks, who would have turned 86 years old yesterday, born in 1937 in Mansfield. He grew up in Buffalo. Interestingly, because, of course, Donnie Elbert did as well, and Donnie actually wrote Open the Door to Your Heart, though Daryl Banks had the writer's credit, and there was a real standoff on that. But the real story with Daryl Banks was, sadly, how he met his maker, 32 years old, February of 1970. And so here's Daryl in Detroit, and he's sitting outside his former girlfriend, or wannabe girlfriend, depending on how you look at it, house, 11 in the morning. And girlfriend comes home with her fella of the moment, who was an off-duty police, well, he was a police officer, but he was off-duty at the time. And so here is Banks, and as the off-duty policeman is dropping off the gal at her house, Banks gets out of the car, grabs her, and says, "We gotta talk." Well, at that point, the off-duty policeman had other thoughts and basically said, "Whoa." And but Daryl's response to that was to pull out a gun. Well, you know what happened. So the off-duty policeman pulled out a gun and killed him. Shot him in the neck. He was declared dead just about noon. Meanwhile, the girlfriend, or wannabe, he wanted her to be anyway, because she doesn't cop to that she was actually boyfriend-girlfriend, but she does say, she was a barmaid, by the way, in a Northwest Detroit lounge. She does say, "Well, yes, we were close friends," euphemism for whatever you want, "but I was trying to end the relationship." Well, that's one way to do it, I guess. And so they had last been seen out a few weeks before the "We Gotta Talk" incident that wound up taking his life. So that's Daryl Banks for you, and would have turned 86 if he stayed away from barmaids this week. So 888-876-5593-8888-RALEIGH. And we also have a number of other things that we'll discuss. But the tabloids, of course, love the royal family. But this one I actually got from another fine source, Radar Online. Yes, that bastion of journalism, where we are talking about Prince William. Yeah, not Harry for a moment. Oh, yeah, we got plenty of Harry stories. Don't worry about it. But Prince William is distancing himself between the king, his father, and Queen Camilla because of Queen Camilla's icy treatment of Princess Kate, according to insiders in the palace. And so apparently they make the show in public, but other than that, William has severed ties with his father, and their feud is threatening to rip the monarchy apart. So is everything else, by the way. So apparently William has had pent-up feelings about the evil stepmother for decades, for obvious reasons that we don't need to review. But it exploded when he learned that she was bad-mouthing his wife and their family. For one thing, as you probably heard, she was calling Kate a commoner. And those were fighting words. But more recently, apparently, Camilla has, for whatever reason, stepped up her game. She is behind the king's threat to ban their children, that's William and Kate's children, Prince George, Princess Charlotte, and Prince Louis, from public events due to their behavior. Yeah, I don't know. I haven't seen anything other than a little comedic relief. And so that's the latest from the royal family. All is not well. But it is interesting that we have a fascination for this. Obviously more so in Great Britain. But I guess not surprising, since I look at the tabloids and half the time anymore, I don't know who we're talking about. Yeah, that's right. So it's come to this. We'll talk about things that absolutely don't matter, because we will ignore that the judge has rejected the Hunter Biden deal, and we'll ignore the horrible story that a family was forced to pay to transfer the body of a Marine killed in Afghanistan during the withdrawal, and on and on. We'll just have a good time with royals. And that's right. We'll stay. Oh, and a warning from a nurse, actually. And this is a safety warning. She wants the world to know. So let's help her out. And apparently, the target of her ire, she's a 26-year-old ICU nurse, and she's saying, "Stay away from e-scooters. They're so freaking dangerous." And that's a direct quote. And so, of course, I had to look it up. What the hell is an e-scooter? But you probably know. And they're those motorized scooters you'll see that you can rent or, you know, for a couple of quarters in the vending machine or whatever, Lime or Bird or any of those that major cities have. So you can scoot around on a motorized scooter. But according to this nurse, you're more likely to be scooting to the emergency room. And what popped her cord completely was a 25-year-old patient who fell off the motorized scooter, broke his back, now paralyzed for life. Well, another one with a traumatic brain injury. But what was interesting to me, as she put this out on, of all, again, bastion of journalism's TikTok, but the amount of fellow nurses who went, emergency room techs in general, who weighed in to say it louder for people in the back. This is absolutely dangerous. So I don't know if there are any warnings on the scooters. Hell, there are warnings on everything. There got to be warnings on the scooters, right? I wonder what they say. Yeah, right. They tell you what not to do with your blow dryer. Don't use in the shower. Obviously, yes. So what are they saying about the scooters? I don't know. I haven't seen any, but you know that I will be on the lookout for that as well. I keep thinking there was something else that I was planning to follow up on and tell you all about. But now, other than some of your requests that I liked, and of course a lot of Tony Bennett, clearly for the obvious reasons that I don't remember what it was. Yeah, but something. So 888-876-5593-8888-RALEIGH. And of course, if you want predictions such as the housing market, you can get them in any direction you want. There's been a flood of them lately, and you've got everything from it's going up to a flood of housing will be on the market due to mortgage rates getting higher. I don't know. But one study I did find interesting, because we've talked often about how the hell are people affording anything? You know, when you go to Subway and two people, you come out of there with a $37 bill, you know, this is a place that used to be home of, what, the $5 footlong or something. And now it's, you know, you practically want to get an estimate on the sandwich. And I look at this, and again, like many of you say, how the hell are people affording this? Well, according to Fortune magazine, the millennials are affording it on the bank of mom and dad. And there are a number of people clearly who are helped by that, but ultimately this doesn't last forever, to say the least. And there's something going on here that I don't understand. And I mention that almost every night. And I'd be curious if anyone can fully explain to me in this economy how the average person survives it, you know, other than fantastic plastic and credit cards. But according to this article, it's the inheritocracy that you're inheriting. But as I say, that can only last so long. And there was an article from the Great Britain Press too that said that was the big thing, but I don't know. We have Barry Sternlicht. He's a billionaire, and he just defaulted on mortgages and loans. So $200 million of office mortgage loans, actually, commercial property stress. And you say to yourself, and Barry Sternlicht, by the way, that's Starwood Capital Group, and you might remember many years ago, AT&T, when that all split up, became Starwood, and there were a lot of hotels involved with that. I'm trying to think which one, because I somehow had some shares of that, and they mailed me some type of card for their hotels, and I remember going to one and being oh so surprised when the person at the I've never seen one of these. Well, you must be really important. Get out of town. But if you can give me a better room, I'll take it. So 888-876-5593, 8888 Raleigh. And apparently they're saying that Barry Sternlicht could lose $800 billion. Some of that's got to be credit, not money in his pocket, obviously, like most of it. Why? Well, this is another interesting thing when you look at the articles. You get a combination of articles on remote work is killing, just absolutely killing some of the office buildings and investments therein. Then you get other articles saying remote work is ending, and now that people are going back to work, the homes they bought further out in the suburbs are going to crash. I'm telling you, whatever you want to believe, there is a story for you right now. And probably a video as well on YouTube. So 888-876-5593. Karen is in Chicago. What's up, Karen?
Oh, I found a book quite by accident on the National Library Service. Mm-hmm. It was a biography of Jerry Blabbit.
Oh, You Only Rock Once?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I found him to be quite a character.
Yeah.
I remember you talking about it, and that's what got my attention. Well, in the process of reading the book, he mentioned Memories of Margate,
sure.
And he mentioned For Lovers Only. Well,
sure.
I got curious, and I looked him up on YouTube, and I thought Memories of Margate was a riot. It just was so incredible how he got the kids to follow along with him, and he would name off an Oceanside gang and the so-and-so street gang and whatever, and he would know, mention everyone that was there, and he got the kids to sing along with him, and it just fascinated me. And the way I remember you telling about how he spoke over the instrumental parts, but he would always be quiet, you know, when people were singing. And I took notice of that, and he sure did. I just wonder how in the world he timed that.
Well, anybody can talk up a post. I would hope if they're doing this long enough, that part's easy. But a lot of the things you hear on those CDs, like the For Lovers Only CDs, that stuff was, in fact, pre-recorded. That wasn't...
I don't know.
you know,
for lovers but, only.
Yeah,
I thought that was kind of nonsense.
Well, absolutely. Well, and memories wasn't mostly what you're saying. Hold on a minute. Don't go away. 888-876-5593 on WGN Radio.
So many sins that I'm guilty of. If I'm lost in the jungle of life and my way is out of sight, well, show me the way to good. Show me the way to good. Show me the way to good. Show me the way to find my love. If there's jealousy, well, there should be understanding. And if my ways, oh, need a little mending. If my love is fading away, and there's no difference between night or day, well,
WGN Radio. That's Gene Chandler and Barbara Acklin. Show me the way to go on Brunswick 1968. And that was record royalty all the way around. Eugene Record and Barbara Acklin and Carl Davis wrote that. And Carl Davis produced it and Gerald Sims directed it. And it was just a terrific record that woulda, coulda, shoulda been a hit. But all right, so that's at least half Gene Chandler. And I'll try to be mindful of playing more of him. I guess I don't play enough of him because he's a personal fave of mine. And I, you know, when I come across it, I always say, well, I play that too often, whatever it is. But apparently I don't play it enough. All right, so back to Karen in Chicago. All right, so so you're reading the book, so you basically know the story. By the way, if you look for the acknowledgments, you'll see my name with John's name there. So in any event, that said, Memories was never for teens because you had to be 21 years old to get in this club.
So that, yeah, I'm sure.
That's
I never
number,
thought of that, yeah. But now that you mention it.
Right. The real years for Jerry when he was doing those hops were from the early 60s through the mid 60s. And, I mean, you can't take that away from him. Those hops were so successful. He had a helicopter at his disposal if he was going to do two or three a night so he could get, like, from Bristol, you know, down somewhere in Delaware County, wherever. But,
well, you know, I got that. I wanted to hear what it sounded like, because reading about it. So I got it on YouTube. And what really got me about it was the flow, you know, the songs, one song flowed into another, and it was so smooth, and, you know, and then they had the people singing along with them, and it was just amazed me how it just flowed along together. I would love to hear something like that in person.
Yeah, well, mostly you'd hear it on the radio more than in person. But again, those CDs were absolutely productions rather than contemporaneous. Those were not, you know, just a tape of a live appearance. They were put together. Not that that matters.
What I heard on YouTube then was not a live appearance.
No, you if you're talking about anything that's on those CDs, they're all productions.
Oh.
So,
I found it fascinating.
Oh, yeah, well, and
he
again,
quite a character.
Yeah, can't take that away from him. When he was big on that, he was just huge. But, of course, like all of the guys who were doing the record hops and doing the dance shows and all that, by the end of the 60s, they're dead in the water. And, of course, he made the mistake of going out to L.A. to, you know, seek his fortune and fame, and that didn't work out. And when he came,
wow,
when he came back...
No, he was in...
Yeah.
One lawsuit after another.
Well, that's so what. But, I mean, it was such a shock to him when he came back and there was just no one around. You know, that period of time was over. And when he bought Memories, he paid almost nothing for that. It was in Margate. He did get the liquor license, and that was about 1973 that he opened it. And
he said he brought his own records and his own equipment.
Well, everybody does.
And that is amazing to me.
Well, no, I mean, as far as if you're talking about at record hops, of course you bring your own equipment and your records. That's standard stuff.
Well, but to think of how many of them he did and all the traveling he must have done, God, it just amazed me.
Yeah, he was very good at that. But again, there were a number of jocks who did a ton of record hops in the early to mid 60s.
Oh, okay. And you mentioned Gene Chandler. There was a song you played by him, and I heard it, and I wanted to hear it on Alexa, and I can't remember the name. All I can remember, it had the word bless in it.
Bless Our Love. Bless Our Love.
Bless Our Love.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was trying to find it, and I found, of course, the wrong thing. I found Bless You by Tony Arlene.
No, oh God, yes. Which is not bad, though. That was on Epic in the early 60s. It was not an awful record, but no, Bless Our Love, Gene Chandler. Yeah, God Bless Our Love and Forgive Us Our Temptation.
Okay,
yeah,
cool.
Yeah.
And if you get a chance, doesn't have to be tonight, even next week, would you play something by the Manhattans?
Oh, well, you know I do that. Happy to do that.
Your favorite one.
All right. Well, you know, I've got a lot of it. Most everything that was on Carnival. But
on
I'll,
Carnival, yeah that's yeah. what I was going to say. Yeah. Those are my favorites.
Exactly. Those are the ones. All right. We'll
okay.
do it. And I'll get you more
thank
Gene Chandler,
you.
I promise.
You have a great night, and thank you so much. You got a great show.
All right. Thanks. I appreciate that. Yeah. Yeah. Jerry did buy Memories. He does own the building. A lot of people didn't realize that. And, you know, it's for sale now, sadly, that he's gone. And, the last I saw it was, you know, close to $900,000 they were asking. So that was a good investment for him. And his four daughters will profit handsomely from that, as well they should. 888-876-5593, 8888-Raleigh. John in Waukegan. How's it going tonight, John?
Oh, it's going along.
All right.
You know, I saw a couple of days ago where the Senate had a... That is hearing about the UFOs.
Uh-huh.
A lot of people don't believe in UFOs. And even a lot of the airline pilots, you know, they're restricted.
Oh, they don't. Yeah, they don't talk about it because they'll be grounded.
Right.
Yeah.
But our government don't want us to know that. I think we're so far behind the UFOs.
Of course.
The thing of it is, I've you know, talked to people through the years about UFOs. I don't believe in that. Mm. You believe in that crap? I say, well, you take nature. I said, now, water, we don't know where it come from. It's up there somewhere. And that's life-giving. All right, the sunshine. That's up there. That's life-giving. So our sunshine, we see it in the day. It's over us. But at night, it's below us. So that's life-giving. It's just simple mathematics. And a lot of people say, well, I heard someone say not too long ago, I think it was on your show, that They saw a saucer and it was zigzagging. You know what I mean? Like just like hotscotch.
Right.
And making odd moves.
Right, doing things that we cannot do with any flying things. Yes, of course, it defies all our knowledge. Of course, it does.
And then it shoots away. You know what I mean? At a tremendous speed.
Right.
So that's telling me. No dummy could do that. That's very smart, whatever it is.
Not only that, think about it this way. Any UFO that's coming from distant planets, think about if we were trying to go there, it would take us lifetimes to get there. So the thing about these UFOs are they're not taking the long route. They know something we don't about space travel.
Right. And my grandmother, I'm going to go a little deep on this. My grandmother and uncle and auntie said they actually seen unidentified objects mm-hmm. on their farm. And mm-hmm. all three of them couldn't be having this hallucination, you know.
Well, you don't have to convince me. I absolutely believe it. And the reason they're having the hearings is because for the first time, somebody who was an intelligence officer in the Air Force and Geospatial Intelligence Agency, David Grush, he's come forward as a whistleblower. And in fact, there was an interview with him on News Nation about a month or so ago that was really interesting. He's not saying anything that hasn't been said before, but this is the first time somebody directly within the annals of government has come out and said it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I don't doubt it for a moment. And I think that I it's not lost on me that we really started to see activity right after World War II when we unleashed a nuclear bomb. At that point, I think we got some attention. And somebody said, yeah, let's see what those earthlings are doing down there. And of course, we had, you know, Roswell and all this. And for years, nobody talked about Roswell. It was nothing. And then, you know, some books came out later about it and it became a big thing. But, you know, of course there are UFOs just by definition because they're unidentified to us. But apart from that, I absolutely believe that these are coming from other dimensions and other locations. But again, they can't be going the long way or they'd never get here. So they know a lot more than we do about this.
Right.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Okay, well, I'm going to cut myself short.
All right.
I know you got some other people waiting.
Well, I'm glad you called. It's always good to hear from you, John.
Okay, talk to you later.
Okay, bye. So, yeah, so it's very very interesting to see what's coming on. But no, I don't doubt it for a moment. And you hear those anecdotal stories about, well, Eisenhower made a deal with the UFOs and you know, with the inhabitants of the UFOs. Who knows? Now, meanwhile, the government's official line is, we haven't discovered any verifiable information to substantiate any claims or any programs regarding the possession or reverse engineering of extraterrestrial material. Of course. Of course not. 888-876-5593. We'll get to Eduardo in Tampa and you too coming up on WGN Radio.
Yes, it's you I love, Senorita. Still you I'm thinking of. I love you, Senorita. Thrills I get when you hold me tight. I could stay in your loving arms all night, Senorita. I love you more and more, Senorita. You're what my love is for.
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. Yeah, the impressions. Senorita, I love you. 1959 and Abner. Of course, Curtis Mayfield wrote it and recorded it. And Karen in Hyde Park requested it. That was the third of her three impressions records she wanted to hear. And I hope you got to hear them all. Good choices. So 888-876-5593. Eduardo in Tampa, what's going on tonight? How's your mom?
Oh, she's fine. She's sleeping away.
Good, good. So she's home.
Hour.
She's home.
Yeah. Yeah, she's doing fine.
Good.
Yeah. Yeah, I was going to talk about a little bit about the, you notice all these, everybody now in society is getting a pay raise. Everybody from UPS to, they just announced TSA is getting a pay raise too. Mm-hmm. But are we really getting, like, good customer service? That's what I'm wondering, because a lot of these jobs are burnouts. They're not properly trained. I heard in Dallas they don't have enough people for 911 calls. People are waiting a long time to get through on the line. So I'm wondering, are we really getting, like, good customer service with all these different industries? What do you think about that?
Well, I think that there's a number of facets to this. When we talk about pay, and you're right that there's a number of raises, and of course, if you're trying to attract employees, you're going to have to pay what someone will take to do the job. But the reality to the employer, it's not how much is the worker worth, it's how much is the job worth. And so when you get a situation where pay goes up and the employer can't justify that, then very often what they start to do is cut personnel. So the pay may be higher, but there may be less people doing it. So when you talk about customer service, that's a factor right there. Is the labor force still the same amount of people? Now, of course, if it's the same amount of people and they're making more money, you're also going to talk about there's going to be an increase in what it's going to cost to get the goods and service of the company. You know, it doesn't come out of nowhere. I think the issue is not pay at this point, and the issue isn't even that we do not have enough able workers wanting to do the jobs, although, by the way, that's a very serious discussion, and for the life of me, I don't understand it. But in regards to customer service, I think more than anything else, you're seeing the result of individuals in corporations who have found a way to cut costs and hopefully gain some reliability by automating a lot of functions. And so when you're talking about customer service, actually dealing with somebody who is in a position to help you, who's a human being and not artificial intelligence, is more difficult than it used to be. And that person is probably handling more work than any human being could do.
Yeah, and of course now we got the chat, the automated system coming on the line to.
You've already got it. I mean, how often do you call a business, assuming you want to talk to an agent? Long before you talk to the agent, you go through 7 rounds of voicemail. Press 1 for this.
Right.
Press 2 for that. Press 7 to hear a duck quack. That's why I say people are on their last nerve. I think that this is a huge problem societally, and I don't see an easy answer, but increasingly, and especially as wages go up, increasingly employers are looking for ways to automate processes so there is no employee. And there's nothing new about that. It's just now there's many more things they can do to that end. Before, they were pretty limited in what they can do. Well,
and it's triggering, I think, in some industries, it's triggering costs is being passed down to the consumer.
Well, every time, that's true. Hang on, don't go away. Because there's what Eduardo was talking about, there are so many phases of this, and maybe we can kind of try to parse it. Not that we want to be serious, however, it's something on all of our minds. We'll pick it up right there next hour on WGN Radio.
Just in time, I found you just in time. Before you came, my time was running low. I was lost, the losing dice were tossed. My bridges all were crossed. Nowhere to go. Now you're here, and now I know just where I'm going. No more doubt or fear, I found my way. For love came just in time. You found me just in time and changed my lonely life that lovely day. Just
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James, and yes, it's Tony Bennett. Of course, it's on Columbia, 1956, just in time. And we're talking to Eduardo in Tampa about customer disservice, and he brought up the fact that, you know, people are getting paid more and we're getting less out of them. Well, let's back up a moment here again about the people are getting paid more deal, and first go and understand what I was saying earlier, that it's not a question of what is a worker worth, it's what is a job worth. So let's say you as an employer, you've got a little part-time job. You want somebody to rake the leaves once a week. And maybe you just want them in the yard and you'll pay them $5 an hour to rake your leaves for a couple hours. Well, you can't do that anymore. Got to pay them $15. So what happens next? You don't hire them. That's a part-time job some kid or whatever loses because you're not going to pay $15. You're either going to rake your own leaves. And of course, if someone comes to your door selling, well, we've got an automatic leaf raker that you can buy here. Well, of course, now you're interested because you're not going to pay the prevailing wage. So what you were talking about automation and things like that, the higher minimum salaries go, the more attractive automation is. But there's much more to this. People who are saying, you know, $15 an hour because everybody needs a livable wage. Well, guess what? $15 an hour is not a livable wage. If you add that out, you're working a 40-hour week for $15 an hour, you're grossing less than $32,000 a year. That's not livable, not by anybody's economy. So again, it shouldn't be about what is the worker worth, it's what is the particular job worth. And when you have jobs that are not worth it to the employer to pay a lot of money, he's either going to be able to automate it if that's possible, or he's going to hire less people to do it. So what you were saying at the beginning of the call with, you know, customer service seems to be going downhill, you're absolutely right. But in that equation, how could it do anything else?
Yeah, you're right.
See, that's the part.
And yeah, and then if you have kids, obviously that's not going to be enough
It's not going to be enough if you don't have kids. That's why I'm saying this myth about everybody should get a living wage. Well, I'm sorry, $15 an hour in today's economy, even in yesterday's economy, is not a living wage. And so the reality is that, again, it's what's the worth of the job, not what's the worth of the worker. And, you know, so that's gone out the window. But the idea for most employer, you're talking about larger employers for the most part when you're dealing with customer service and things like that, you know, it's not necessarily a case of greed. I'm actually a little more comfortable when it's a case of greed because that's fixable. But when it's a case of desperation, we have no choice but to use less workers to keep the doors open. We got a problem. And of course, let's say you're working at one of these jobs. You're a worker bee, you're a customer service agent, and you're putting in your 40 hours, and maybe you are getting $20 an hour. All right, this is still, by the way, not a lot of money in the scheme of things. But all right, now what happens when there's a round of layoffs and a third of the people you're working with get laid off, and that third of the work is distributed among the people who are left? Well, you don't want to lose your job, so you don't complain. But I'd say within an hour of getting to work every day, if you're that customer service agent, you're overwhelmed.
Yeah, stressed out, yeah.
So, you know, when you talk about, you know, is customer service going up? No, of course not. It's going down dramatically. Now, I've got all the ways to Sunday to tell you what's happening. What I don't have, Eduardo, is what the hell can we do about this? Because I don't know.
Well, we got to have a big focus study.
Well, but you see what I mean. I don't think anybody realistically has a great solution to this at this point in time. And it is, I think, adding exponentially to the stress of the day-to-day person. You know, either the person having to deal with customer service or the person who's behind the desk trying to do their job. Both of them are in tremendously stressed out positions. And when we hear things like, you know, somebody going crazy and shooting somebody else, not that I'm in any way condoning that, but I'm saying, yeah, well, when you're on your last nerve, things start to happen.
Yeah, and a lot of these workers are complaining, especially with this heat that's going around the whole country. You know, they'd like if you're in a mail truck, you don't have the air on.
Oh, yes.
They're not.
Speaking of that, you know, those mail trucks, yesterday I saw a guy in Arizona in a mail truck. It was 121 degrees, and he was wearing long sleeves. And I said to John, how is this man alive? And to this day, I don't understand. You know, 24 hours later, I still don't understand how the hell this guy pulled it off with a long sleeve shirt. But
yeah, it's got to be light colors. I mean, it wasn't, but it's got to be like light colors.
No, it was dark. It was a black shirt.
Yeah, or yeah.
Yeah, it.
Yeah, that's a no-no.
Well, so I think that, you know, I think there'd be a Nobel Prize to somebody who can figure out where this is going, but I don't see it going in a good direction. So, no.
And then the employers also going to have to deal with, particularly the big ones, with all that real estate that they have, and you know, you obviously don't need all that space. That's going to have to go.
Well,
you're going to have to do something with that.
Well, and you're starting to see, like I mentioned, Barry Sternlicht, the billionaire who is in, you know, office space and things like that. He's losing a fortune right now. In terms of the workforce, not only do you have less people working, but you also have some people still working stay at home. And we're probably not going to know for a couple of years how that really settles out. But I'd say a couple of years from now, we're going to have a better idea of what the percentage of working from home really is. And that's going to be an interesting tale. But
listening to the Florida news that the rents were going down because now they were going back home because they were getting rid of that, you know, work from anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So now rents were going a little bit more, having lower rents in Florida.
Well, I think
because everybody's going back.
Well, I think that you're seeing two things. Rent is rising in the places that's closer to the employment and dropping in the places that's farther away. Sometimes it doesn't mean state to state. It may mean people who've moved out to the exurbs or further out into the country who now are going to have to be in the city every day. They're going to have to come back. So, yeah, the real estate. And that's an interesting thing about real estate because, of course, one of the ways they were able to get prices through the roof is by people not saying what's the house cost. They wanted to know what are the monthly payments. Well, at 3%, maybe they were $2,500 a month and you and your spouse are working and you can afford that. Okay. Well, now that same house for that same money might be $6,000 a month in payments. And all we've done is double the interest rates. Well, they're not going to go down again anytime soon. And they're probably going to go up a little further. So now you've got a situation where even if somebody was able to sell the house they bought, assuming they had some equity in it, how are they going to afford to buy another one when the note is causing the payment not to be $2,500, but $6,000 a month?
Right.
So I just see all these things coming together and colliding, and I do not understand how this works. You know, I'm not saying it's falling apart because I have no way to know that. But what I am saying is my crystal ball is completely cloudy. I don't see how this works. You know, I don't see how it works that the average three-bedroom house in Los Angeles, and by the way, when we're talking average three-bedroom house, we are not talking about a palatial estate, trust me. So the average three-bedroom house is renting, not buying, renting for over $4,200 a month.
Right.
Well, who can afford $4,200 a month in rent? You know, obviously there are some people who can afford a lot more than that. But when you talk about the rank and file and the majority of people, I don't understand how this works. So, you know, I'd love it if somebody could call and say, oh, don't worry, Raleigh, because here's how it's going to be and I can explain this completely. But I've yet to hear from that person.
Yeah, let's hope for the best in the future for everybody.
Yeah, something's got to give, and I don't know what it is. I'm just glad I'm not young.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah. I mean, I'm happy I was able to pay off my house, my car.
Yeah.
No student loans.
Right.
Nice credit score, so I'm one of the lucky ones, but hopefully a lot more people are going to be in that club, too.
Yeah, well, it'd be nice, but I don't foresee it with the way things are going. And then we get to the fact that there are so many job openings still out there with no one applying for them. I do not understand how we suddenly have a dearth of workers. You can't tell me they're all drug kingpins. You can't tell me they're all TikTok millionaires. So when you look at it, of course, there's a small percentage of people who do very well at the illicit trade or the online trade. But the majority of people don't have, are they all in mom's basement? I don't know.
And I even heard the food pantries were up. And not just from poor people, but I mean middle class, even upper class.
Like I say, when you go to Subway and a couple Subway sandwiches and you're saying it's $37, I can see why the food pantry might be up. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. There you go. Yep.
Yeah, there's a story here that obviously I can't tell. I can point out all the symptoms eloquently, but absolutely none of the solutions because it just doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay, Raleigh, I'll let you get to the next call.
Very good. Always good to depress you. Thank you for calling. Talk to you soon.
Have a good weekend, everyone.
Bye. You too. Yeah, 888-876-5593 is 8888 Raleigh. And, you know, these are the mostly unspoken questions, but I keep hoping that there's something in the picture that I'm just not seeing. Oh, speaking of just not seeing, I heard from David in Long Beach who sent me a lengthy article on Tony Bennett in terms of how the comeback occurred. Because remember I was saying, I don't know exactly. Well, it was his older son more than anything. Now, of course, wouldn't have mattered whatsoever if Tony Bennett, you know, didn't have a world of talent. But at this point in time, if he didn't have a son who was able to orchestrate this, that probably wouldn't have mattered either. So it was the perfect combination. And you'll hear more Tony Bennett coming up on WGN Radio.
Poets often use many words to say a simple thing. It takes thought and time and rhyme to make a poem sing. With music and words I've been playing, for you I have written a song. To be sure that you'll know what I'm saying, I'll translate as I go along. Fly. And let me play among the stars. Let me see what spring is like on Jupiter and Mars. In other words, hold my hand. In other words,
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. Of course, that's Fly Me to the Moon, which we're playing the Joe Harnell wonderful bossa nova version last night. But that, of course, Tony Bennett. And there were probably over 100 recordings of that before he recorded it. The first one to record it, not the first one to do it live, but the first one to record it was Kay Ballard in 1954. And after that, man, the floodgates opened. Everybody, including Nancy Wilson and Dion and the Belmonts, did this song. And on an April Stevens, you name it. And it was 1965. Actually, I think he recorded it on April 19th, an infamous day, 1965, that Tony Bennett did it. But I believe there's more than 850 versions of that song. So, no shortage of Fly Me to the Moon, including Esther Gilberto. But my favorite, of course, like I mentioned, that Joe Harnell. Though I think that Tony did a wonderful version as well, as you just heard. 888-876-5593. 888-888-RALEIGH. And that takes us to Ruth and Gurney. All right, Ruth, what's up?
Hi, this is James. I have a request, and I don't usually ask for more than one or two, but if it is you three, if you can find, my preference would be hearing it for the first time as doo-wop, it would be Bella Norte and Italian That's Amore and New York, New York for the man who was an Italian last name, which meant blessed. Tony Bennett, his last name in Italian means blessed.
Mm-hmm.
And when I had seen him at Ravinia a couple of times, they had a large cardboard look-alike of Tony Bennett. That was really incredible, and it just passed throughout, you know, one section of the park to another section. But that Lady Gaga belted it out with that Vivien Roth, Vivien Roth. She was incredible. And I'm glad that I did get to see him in very last time also, because I had a feeling that it was going to be the last performance. He dearly loved Ravinia. So that's it. I would love it in doo-wop, but whatever you have, and even Jimmy Durante, he might have a great version of
I think we'll we'll pass on Jimmy Durante, but I'll try to come up with somebody who's on the more doo-wop vein. I'll look for that and let you know, and played your other one so we can find these two.
We salute him with a tribute.
All right. Well, thanks.
Some wonderful songs.
Appreciate it, Ruth. Thanks.
Thank you. Good night.
All right. So, yeah, That's Amore. And I think that was first released by Dean Martin and Jerry Lewis. I did not know that that was in another language for Bella Norte. Got to look that up because I have no idea about that. But I sure know it is That's Amore. And we will, if not tonight, certainly get that on next week. And tomorrow night will be a replay of Monday Night Trivia. But in the meantime, we've got an hour and a half to spend together, so do call 888-876-5593 on WGN Radio.
Folks are blessed who make the best of every day, living by their own philosophy. Everyone beneath the sun must find a way, and I have found the only way for me. I don't believe in fretting and grieving. Why mess around with strife? I never was cut out to step out and start out. Give me the simple life. Some find it pleasant dining on pheasant. Those things roll off my knife. Just serve me tomatoes and mashed potatoes. Give me the simple life. Now a cottage small is all I'm after, not one that's spacious and wide. A house that rings with joy and laughter, and the ones that you love inside. Some like the high road, I like the low road, free from the cares and strife. Sounds corny and seedy, but yes indeedy, give me the simple life.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. More Tony Bennett. Give me the simple life. Yeah. Well, speaking of the simple life, and by the way, interrupt the show as the mood might strike you at 888-876-5593. I've been looking online for a number of different websites because I read this article about the glamorous El Chapo cartel smuggler, La Gabi, caught after $1 million bounty was placed on her head. So the drug cops put out a poster saying they were offering up to $1 million. And that would be 778,000 pounds for the ones that were in Great Britain, for her capture. She was a Guatemalan who, a lovely-looking woman, 33 years old, allegedly part of the criminal network connected to the Sinaloa cartel and El Chapo's ruthless offspring. All right, so very well. I can't find who turned her in, and that's exactly what I was going for. You know, we offer $1 million, I would think the Mexican cops turned her in, but I don't know. So they've got her now, and for what's that's worth, and that's the deal. But I've been looking for article after article and cannot find out who got the $1 million. They all crowed about how they got her because of the $1 million reward. Yeah, well, who got it? Ana Gabriela Rubio Zia, 33 years old, La Gabi. And so she was flown to New York alongside four other Guatemalan drug traffickers yesterday. Guatemalan, I should. All right, so Los Chapitos, the cartel's most violent faction, is accused of producing fentanyl in Mexico and trafficking it to the United States. And so she's charged with a conspiracy to possess and distribute 400 grams of fentanyl and conspiracy to commit money laundering. And like I say, up to $1 million. Now, of course, it does say up to, kind of like internet speeds. Yeah, up to a gig. Well, yeah, but that could mean 1 megabit, too. But in any event, she played a crucial role, they say, in purchasing 25 kilograms of a chemical from China used to produce fentanyl on behalf of the Sinaloa cartel. And after it arrived in Mexico, it was processed before, coming here. And so they relied on her because she ensured the product's safe delivery. She was able to pass through customs without detection because she didn't look the part. Yeah, she a Gucci-loving gal who didn't look like she'd be transferring drugs. So the U.S. says, we're going after the entire Sinaloa network. Yeah, I'm sure you are. But who got the $1 million? I don't know. And there are now several others associated with El Chapo, his sons, basically all that, who are still on the loose, so to speak. And the father, El Chapo himself, Joaquin Guzman, is serving a life sentence in a supermax here in the U.S. And these three sons remain at large and continue to run the organization. And so now the DEA has a $10 million bounty on Alfredo, one of the sons' head. All right, well, you would think that somebody would be turning him in real soon. And their sibling, Ovido Lopez, is already behind bars. He was arrested January 5th after a massive shootout, left 29 dead. And the Guatemalan Ministry of the Interior said that the five accused individuals were handed over to the United States. Yeah, but $10 million. Wow. And so I don't know. Apparently, La Gabi was detained, and it's been a while. In March, while traveling in a vehicle on Landivar Boulevard in Mexico. And so now she's in New York facing these charges. But like I say, I look at this and who got the $1 million? I think we're never going to know or exactly how much they got. All right. Plenty of cartel stories, to say the least, which is another thing. If you're aware to any degree about the extent of violence on Mexico's northern border, it is, talk about a powder keg, talk about something that's a pressure cooker. It's unbelievable. And I have a friend whose father had just recently gone back to live in the town on the border from which he was from. And, she said, don't go. And, of course, he goes. And so she talks to him, and he says, no, it's really safe as long as you're in your house by sundown and don't go out at night. It's really, yeah, there's no life in that. But you wonder, with the degree of the violence that's there, where does this end? And I guess I say that about so much things. So there we were talking last night about the Mexican Navy capturing 3.5 tons of cocaine and Italy capturing 5 tons of cocaine. And and you wonder. Meanwhile, we've got a mystery company, and we have no reason to believe there's any problem with this as far as that goes. This is not Crimes R Us here. A mystery company buys $1 billion worth of land near an Air Force base. That should raise your eyebrows just a tad. And it's near Travis, a California Air Force base. And the group is Flannery Associates. And they've invested over $800 million on 54,000 acres of land surrounding Travis, zoned for agricultural use. And the legal representation says, oh, the group is controlled by U.S. citizens. 97% of its capital comes from U.S. investigators. But here's the problem. After 8 months of investigation, federal officials can't confirm or deny this is true. They are not able to determine who is backing this company. So I would say that's somewhat of a concern. Yeah. 54,000 acres surrounding an Air Force base in the United States, and we don't know who these people are? Be an interesting story. Now, how the hell can't the federal government find out who these people are? You know, you assume that Flannery Associates is some type of a corporation or an LLC. I don't know. I guess I'd have to look it up. But their principles, obviously they're not publicly traded, we know that. But even so, their principles have got to be known somewhere. I don't know. All right, so yeah, I got a lot of I don't knows tonight as far as that goes. And I'm ignoring all the stories like the global ID, the world ID is coming soon. I don't even want to know about this. Absolutely don't want to know. But it's really interesting. There was an article on Mercola, who is an alt-med site, how Chase Bank closed all of his accounts, ostensibly because, I don't know what, because they didn't like what he was saying, clearly, and did that with his employees as well. And then I see an article right next to it. Jeffrey Epstein withdraws up to $80,000 in cash several times a month. Yeah, no problem. I don't, nothing to worry about here. But some other guy has something politically incorrect, I guess, to say about, I don't know, vaccines or something. Bottom line is that, yeah, we'll close his. But yeah, $80,000 a month, and no problem with that. All right, Jeff is a first-time caller. He's in Beloit, Wisconsin. Welcome to WGN Radio, Jeff. How is it going? I'm trying to say how is it going, but I don't know if I'm succeeding. Are you there, Jeff? No. Why am I not talking to Jeff? Jeff, I believe I'm trying to talk to you. I don't know what went wrong, but at a first-time caller, too. And let's try it again. All right, Jeff, welcome to WGN Radio.
Hi, Raleigh. How are you?
All right, how about yourself?
Oh, I'm doing okay. A little hot here in Beloit, Wisconsin, but yeah. I really appreciate your knowledge of radio and the music. It's just astounding. We don't hear that in Beloit, but I had a question for you.
What?
It has to deal with Germany. Prior to the war, the Germans had like five or more AM radio stations. And they did this for propagation, you know, I'm not sure if I said that right, propaganda, excuse me.
Yeah.
And then they also did it for navigation purposes. There was something called the Oslo Report, and England had received this, and they didn't realize, they just seemed like it was so far-fetched. But when they had a German plane crash in the Battle of Britain, they saw that they were mm-hmm. dialed in on AM radio station.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And this is how they navigated mm-hmm. to knock out the radar.
Mm-hmm.
So I was just curious. There's something called a VOR. Oh, and also I've flown, and the way to navigate is actually to dial in an AM radio station.
Mm-hmm.
Now they have GPSs, but for the longest time you had mm-hmm. to dial in an AM radio station. Did you know that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and pretty incredible.
And actually, not only the transmitters, but that's also why they blacked out people during the war listening to the radio. They're depending on what equipment you're using, there was a lot to be gained by someone listening to the radio. So they had entire blackouts. You could tune into a radio station, use a directional antenna, and determine the direction to the broadcasting antenna. And then you could use another measurement and a triangulation, and then you can plot on a map where the location is. So, yes, absolutely, this can be done.
They had killed like 90 groups of people that England had sent over there.
Mm-hmm.
Because they could do that. They would triangulate them, and they would find out where they're at. And then it was quite an interesting thing that they had done.
Well, it wasn't just World War II. The first time I think pilots navigated using AM was 1920.
Is that right?
Yeah, Hampton Roads, Virginia. And they were able to locate and fly directly to a Navy ship that was about 100 miles off the shore. And that was the first documented use of AM radio navigation by an aircraft. So the idea of doing it wasn't anything new by the time World War II came around.
Okay, but I was going to say, with the Oslo report, this one guy figured out what they were doing.
Uh-huh.
And what he did is he was credited, I think his name was Anderson, he was accredited with bending the beam. And what I think they did is they just shut down a radio station and moved it,
mm-hmm.
superimposing the signal to throw off the navigation. And so this guy was accredited with bending the beam, which I don't think you can bend a radio beam, can you?
Mm-hmm. Well, the Germans were convinced that the British could do it. And so that's how this all started, all right? And this was fairly early World War II. And German bombers, were able to use accurate systems of radio navigation for bombing the UK. And at some point, they, in their mind, said, well, the British are able to bend the beam. There's something called the Battle of the Beams in the Second World War. You can probably read about that. And
I haven't yet, but I'd like to. Thank you.
Yeah, no, you will. And the idea, hang on a minute. Don't go away. Stay right where you are. John says, yeah. I got to pay bills, and I will. And we'll come right back right here on WGN Radio. Oh, it's my fault. I didn't introduce it properly. Wait, without further ado, I always screw this. I always forget this. And now it's time for Walter's Perspective, sponsored by HearingHealthCenter.com. WGN Radio. We'll forgo the bumper since we've only got about 5 minutes left this hour. We're talking to Jeff, a first-time caller in Beloit, about radio navigation in terms of World War II. So let's go back. Now, you're aware before the war, the Lorenz system and how that works, right?
That I'm not.
Well,
I might know it by a different name.
Yeah, it's
one called McVine.
Lorenz is it's a three-element antenna. It's got a modulated signal, and as you're coming into land, if you're to the left of the landing, you're going to hear dashes. If you're to the right of the landing, you're going to hear, say, dots. And if you're right on target, you'll hear a modulated signal of dashes and dots. So you would know whether you're on the approach or not.
That's after my time.
Okay.
In my day, you had to look down and you would see a light at
night. Right.
Called the Bassey light. And by, according to your attitude and altitude, it would change color.
Right. You're
so
absolutely
you
right. So that would absolutely be a visual representation of what we're talking about audio-wise. So, and what we're looking for here are blind landing aids, because during the war, if you were going to bomb a city, well, that wasn't hard. The city covers a lot of ground. But if you're looking for a target, well, in a blacked out night, it's hard to find the target. And so all of this was about night bombing and finding targets. And when the UK folks found out how the Germans were doing this, and it was kind of a form of a Lorenz system, what they wound up doing was jamming them with Morse code so that ultimately the pilots would be well off course, but it would sound like they were right on course.
Yes, I agree.
So that's that.
Bending the beam sounds a little far-fetched.
Right. Well, that's right. But that's just the phrase for it, and that's what it was. Bending the beam. That's what that was.
And have you ever heard of the guy Mescaline?
Yeah.
Yeah, he was a magician. That he made it harder for them to bomb. You put lights in different areas and so forth, and they would bomb the lighted area. And,
yeah.
Interesting stuff.
Well, it is interesting stuff, and it's all very ingenious all the way around when you think about it, because for the most part, we're talking about things that are relatively low-tech.
Yeah, that guy made a tank that you could fold up, made of cardboard in less than a minute.
Uh-huh.
So in a half an hour, all of a sudden, where do these 100 tanks come from?
Right, and isn't it sad how inventive people are and what bad uses, not the individuals themselves, but those who were contracting with them would use it for. Just a real unfortunate situation.
Yes. Well, it's great talking to you, and I thank you for answering my phone call.
Absolutely. I hope you'll call me again. Thank you.
All right, Raleigh.
All right.
Have a good day.
So, good deal. So, and we're going to talk to Don and Beloit, actually. So, Beloit is checking in tonight. How about that? 888-876-5593-8888. Raleigh, not sure why, but it is a relatively quiet night tonight. So, if you've often said, oh, she's got too many calls, I'll wait too long, tonight is your night. Well, unless something changes in the next 3 minutes. All right. So, we'll get our preamble here from Don and Beloit, and then we'll finish next hour. So, what's up, Don?
Hey, Riley, how you doing?
All right, how about yourself?
I'm good. I'm off and out of town working, and I listen to you all over the place in the Midwest, but I'm back home, fed my chickens, and it is hot and blowing outside. It's super hot and humid here.
Oh, yeah.
You know, yeah. I heard you talking earlier about this subject, but I mean, I'm not saying anything political at all, but I mean, all the money that I've saved, all my friends, I mean, all of our money, it's all like 14% worth less money now, you know, than it was a couple of years ago. That's just, I don't think you're really talking about inflation so much. But
well, inflation as well, but see, destroying. All of this, all and inflation would have to result when you're talking about what we've been doing since 2008, you know, when the rules changed at the Bank of International Settlements. Hang on a minute, we'll talk about this next hour, right here. I'll try to make it interesting on WGN Radio.
Out of the tree of life, I just picked me a plum. You came along and everything started to hum. Still, it's a real good bet, the best is yet to come. The best is yet to come, and babe, won't it be fine? You think you've seen the sun, but you ain't seen it shine. Wait till the warm-up's underway. Wait till our lips have met. Wait till you see that sunshine day. You ain't seen nothing yet. The best is yet to come, and babe, won't it be fine? The best is yet to come, come the day you're mine. Come the day you're mine.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James, and that, of course, is Tony Bennett. The best is yet to come. It was February of 1961 when that came out. Fine song. All right, now, we talked to Don and Beloit here about a real sleight of hand, the economy. It's funny, we were talking with Jeff, a first-time caller earlier, about sleight of hand mescaline. Actually, his grandfather, John Neville, was the real kingpin of this, and his father as well. They were magicians of sorts. And at the time that his grandfather got into it, it was right about the time that we were seeing the spiritualist movement really rise and table tipping and all those things. And it's interesting because by the time Jasper, that was a grandson, got involved. World War II, everyone was looking for some way to trick the enemy. And, you know, we were no exception. Look at the Philadelphia experiment. The idea of invisibility, either making things appear that are not there that are, or in the case of what mescaline is credited with, and the reality is he might not have even been there on the scene, but anyway, with an entire army there in Cairo that, you know, didn't exist. But that ties in directly with the economy, because in 2008, what happened, the reason September 2008 was meltdown day is that's when the new rules from the Bank of International Settlement went into effect. And for a year beforehand, I had been talking about, well, the economy is going to collapse. And when it did, people thought that, like, I was a psychic or something. I said, no, I just read the documents from the Bank of International Settlements. And what it did was it changed the requirements for banks and such to, in fact, have as reserves, and virtually none of them qualified. And so, because, you know, the Bank of International Settlements is kind of like the Federal Reserve's Federal Reserve worldwide. It's in Basel, Switzerland. All right. So here it comes. Here come the new rules, and nobody qualifies, basically. And so here comes the big meltdown with mortgages and all that, and because this is all about debt. So what do we do? Well, let's throw more debt. Let's have quantitative easing. Let's pump more money into the economy. And we're doing this ad nauseum. And at the same time, we're lowering interest rates. We're making it so favorable for entities to, in fact, borrow that the entire, quote unquote, recovery is fueled by debt. Now, when you do that, you don't need mathematics. You can just stick with arithmetic to understand why inflation is going to be the result. And so it wasn't a question of if, it was a question of when and how much, and we still don't know that answer. And of course, many of us keep worrying about the Weimar Republic coming true. But of course, inflation happened. How could it not? But now, if you have a recovery that's fueled by debt, all right, by easy interest rates, and inflation results, which you know it will. Well, if you raise those interest rates beyond a certain point, if the economy is truly fueled by debt, what happens then? And that's the question. So, Don, anything else?
It's an interesting analogy. I like that a lot because I remember September 2008 like yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to throw something at you and the other listeners. You know, I was not a fan, but McCain was McCain, and he was supposed to go on Letterman, and he was leading, and everything was looking great. And then he cancels Letterman. He goes to D.C. with all the other politicians, and everybody was saying they can't fail. They can't fail. You know, got to give them the bailouts. And, that was my memories of that period was more on, oh, we got to give them all this, you know,
well,
we got to give them money so they can't, it's, you know, the Lehman Brothers.
Right.
And,
well,
and
that's
different types of
yeah,
of
that's why.
Policy.
In fact, I was filling in 2008 in the fall on GN, of all things. And I remember when that was going on, I dubbed it the, no bank left behind movement, you know, because at that time they were talking about no child left behind and all that. But it was no bank left behind. And sure, that's part of it. But that trickles right down to every facet, including the individual who is, in trouble, so to speak. It's all
yeah.
fueled by easy availability of credit. And when inflation results, which it must, at that point, anything you do to properly correct this, you're going to crash the system.
And so they go bankrupt. So that would be done from Beloit's point. Would have been like, okay, they go bankrupt.
The problem at this point is it's not they going bankrupt. It's virtually everybody going bankrupt. I mean, it's the entire system collapsing. And at that point, what happens to the value of the dollar?
Yeah. I know you like how I sort of jump around. I just kind of wanted to just let's put that aside. Don't mind. Can we change?
Well, I hope you do, because this is not only somewhat boring, but it's really, really depressing.
Oh yeah, that's a horrible thing. And I ended up working at these power plants at the time, and that's all we talked about for months and months was this horrible thing that the whole country was going through with these bailouts. Well,
yeah.
let's take a deep breath and talk about Tony Bennett. And you know, wow, what a guy! I mean, the horrors of World War II and the horrors of Battle of the Bulge. He experienced some. I'm even my voice is cracking talking about it. But you know, the replacement soldiers having to rush to the front all over. You know, it's been well documented. All kinds of different divisions and famous divisions and the paratroopers and so on. But he was with a division called the 63rd. He was a replacement. It's one of the worst, most dangerous jobs you can have, and I just wanted to say, you know, the freezing, the chaos, the desperate fighting during the Battle of the Bulge, trying to stay warm and stay alive. You know, he was part of all that, and then later, of course, he gets he liberates Landsberg concentration camp near Dachau. And you know, just what a guy. What a guy, all the things that he did in his life. Wow.
Well, what's interesting is, on a personal level, what happened as the 60s progressed to the end of the 60s, into the 70s, to his career, was even more personally devastating than anything he lived through in the war. And on the big thing, scheme of things, we wouldn't think so, of course. But on a personal level, surviving that and triumphing again was the real amazing story there. And as I mentioned, it was David in Long Beach who had sent me the Variety article from, I guess, last week on some of this, explaining exactly how his son did it. And his son absolutely orchestrated his comeback. But that's Danny. The reality is, Danny could never have pulled this off if Tony, A, didn't have the talent, I don't care what, but B, also, I still say, he was just a good guy. It was absolutely hard not to like Tony Bennett. And I think it was a combination of his talent and his nature and Danny's unrelenting desire to look at new ways to get exposure. And it worked. It's amazing. So good for him. But man, I'll tell you, if this were the early 70s, yeah, forget about it. He couldn't get arrested. And after being so big, to go through that personally, that's devastating.
I see. I didn't read his biography like that, but that's neat. How was the son was really responsible?
The son was absolutely responsible. You know, and I didn't realize that. When I read the Variety article, it really clicked. And, you know, Tony, like I say, had gone so far down that by the end of the 70s, he was, you know, wanted by the IRS. They were going to repossess his house even. They got his money and everything else, and he owned millions of dollars and all this. And he was doing cocaine. And probably so he wound up with an absolute overdose. Obviously, it didn't kill him, but it wound him up in the hospital. And, you know, you talk about hitting bottom, and that's one thing, like in AA, there's always a discussion about how, you know, a drunk has got to hit bottom first, but there's many types of bottoms. There's low bottoms, there's high bottoms. Hopefully you hit bottom at a place where you can, in fact, crawl back, you know, that it's not a real low bottom. Well, in this case, he was just at the bottom, and he reached out to his son. And his few sons, actually, but the one who did the management of him, you know, he said, you know, all right, we're gonna work something out, and he wound up reinventing. And actually, his son would say, no, I never reinvented him. It's not a reinvention. The big thing for me is I never wanted him to change. He saw his father as somebody who was still viable, regardless of the demographics or regardless of anything else. And so it was interesting that in some ways it was Tony who had said to his son, you know, as he's getting clean and all that stuff, and they're spending a lot of time together, and he says, hey, I'm watching MTV, I can do that. And he walked out. And at that point, Danny thought, well, I guess those are my marching orders. And so he pitched Tony Bennett being on the MTV Awards, presenting it with the Red Hot Chili Peppers and all that. And a lot of people who were from back in the day said, you're destroying his career, you're alienating the audience, you know, and all this. And Danny said, call me after the show. And so for what reason, and you have to talk to someone at MTV, they thought that this was an interesting idea, they went for it. And, of course, that led to MTV Unplugged and all that. And, you know, the embracing by AOR Radio. But Danny, step by step, was orchestrating this. Like we talked about earlier, the late night television shows that he was on and all the things, the preamble that led up to this, as far as that that goes. So, you know, Danny orchestrated it. It fell in line. It wouldn't have if Tony didn't have the talent, and it wouldn't have if Tony, I still say this, if Tony wasn't a good guy. You know, because people, yeah, people do absolutely respond to personalities as far as that goes. And, you know, from the AOR stuff, he wound up doing a lot of benefit concerts, and that was huge for him. And it was funny because he went to one where he was like between PJ Harvey and Nine Inch Nails, and he asked Danny, he said, "Do you think Frank would do this?" And Danny said, "Nope, that's why you are." And so, you know, he went out there and took the chance. He liked taking the chance, you know, because he absolutely could have been, you know, booed off the stage at any point in that. But it wasn't. It clicked and it worked. So that was the deal. But it was Danny who orchestrated it with the late night TV stuff and then approaching MTV.
I just want to say really quick about the battle of the beams. I mean, I love this. I love our topics today. Wow, all these World War II topics. But well, it was so important. The Germans really were successful for a little while with this beam system. But Enigma, yeah, the British were forewarned that this, yeah, big thing was happening, is going to happen to Coventry. I think it's well documented that it seems like Churchill did know, and they didn't want to lay on,
right,
that they knew, they had previous knowledge. So Coventry was completely destroyed.
Right.
November 14, 1940. The Germans had this great directional thing that would help the navigators, but then there was a crossing beam that would also cross the pass to let them know, okay, I am by the target.
Right.
I need to do something right now. Yep. So it was the directional precision over enemy territory, over darkness, over,
right,
you know, storms and so on. And but then there was also a crossing beam, and you didn't know which one. Well, which one's the important one? You know, then they started doing multiple things and so on like that. And these artifacts are still around. You want to go on some, you know, Dieppe, France beach or somewhere, you're going to find artifacts of where these things were on concrete and so on. And they're still around because the Germans put them all over the place.
Yes.
But
yes,
it reminds me, Raleigh, as you know, that these things, it reminds me, of course, the Amelia Earhart story, the poor Amelia Earhart story. You got the Coast Guard cutter, Itasca, it's out there off of Howland Island, but they didn't practice this. It's trying to give this homing directional finder, and they didn't have the right antenna, and they just didn't have enough experience, unfortunately, to Amelia's plane calling out. It's just a sad story. It just reminded me of that.
There's a very interesting, at the risk of getting into heavy, heavy, heavy conspiracies, and I won't even tell you how to find this if you don't know, but the conspiracy of Ron Brown and his death. And
I've read quite a bit about
so that.
I think that's a very important story. Sure.
Yeah, well, it's fascinating. And, you know, I mean, there were air traffic controllers who actually commit suicide. But I don't know. Not going to go there. But for people who are curious about how to misguide a plane, just read that.
Could you, like, next week sometime, could you play a Sister Tharp, maybe? I was just trying to think of something. Like Sister Tharp.
Rosetta Tharp?
This train, maybe, this train version that she did, this train. Oh, that's such a great song.
I can easily come up with something by Sister Rosetta Tharp that I like, because, after all, this woman was active for, like, 53 years or something.
Yeah,
so
I
think that I can do that.
Something appropriate. That sounds great. Yeah. Molly, I'm sorry to talk your ear off, but, wow, what a great show you had tonight.
You wouldn't know it by the dearth of callers, let me tell you what. But thank you for being one of them. I appreciate it, Don.
All right. Good night. Good night.
So 888-876-5593-8888. Raleigh. So let's see. Something totally, absolutely, completely ear candy and completely useless. Hugh Hefner's widow talking about bunny blackmail. Yeah, I'm back to the tabloids. You can interrupt as the mood might strike you. 888-876-5593 on WGN Radio.
I know I'd go from rags to riches if you would only say you care. And though my pocket may be empty, I'd be a millionaire. My clothes may still be torn and tattered, but in my heart I'd be a king. Your love is all that ever mattered. It's everything.
I'm Raleigh James, and yes, rags to riches. Yes, well, riches to rags to riches. That is the Tony Bennett story, isn't it? So the Titanic sub failed all its safety inspections. Yeah, I guess the folks aboard were unaware of that little piece of information. All right, so the controller, well, we'll talk about the controller, right out of a PlayStation game. It's unbelievable. Right now, we'll find out what is believable on WGN Radio News on WGN Radio.
I wanna be around to pick up the pieces when somebody breaks your heart. Somebody twice as smart as I. A somebody who will swear to be true as you used to do with me. Who'll leave you to learn that misery loves company. Wait and see. I mean, I wanna be around to see how he does it when he breaks your heart to bits. Let's see if the puzzle fits so fine.
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. 888-876-5593. More Tony Bennett, and there'll be one more after this. In fact, I'm going to go back to the one we opened with when we were playing Tony Bennett songs, and that'll be Boulevard of Broken Dreams. The one that started it all for him when Mitch Miller heard that demo. Yeah, that was all he needed to put him on Columbia. And I think still one of the greatest things he ever did. All right, so Stephanie and Madison, what's up tonight?
Hey, I want to talk about Tony Bennett also. I'm just really excited to talk about Tony Bennett. You know, I'm listening to all the different conversations, and I'm thinking about what I can share that I, you know, hasn't been said, but I have to tell you, one of the most wonderful experiences in my and my husband's life was we saw Tony Bennett in 2005 at the Overture Center, brand new venue that had been being planned, and then it was brought forth this wealthy family philanthropist in Madison. Helped fund it, and it's just a beautiful venue. And we saw Tony Bennett, and he was wonderful. He was funny. He sang that, that started to sing Rags to Riches. He says, I never liked that song. I don't know. Oh, it was fun, you know. And he talked about Hank Williams calling him up and giving him hell about his version of Cold, Cold Heart, because it came out, I think it was the same year as Hank's came out. And by the way, I wanted to ask if you could play There'll Be No Teardrops Tonight. I love Tony's version of that. I think Hank wrote that, but it was just he was in such fine form. And he also praised venue. He said, you guys are so lucky to have such a wonderful venue. He said, this is a beautiful place to perform in, and the sound and the acoustics and, it was wonderful. And we had such a good time. And, you know, you talked about your love of pop music. And this was a connection to me and my mom and dad, because I remember being with them as a kid, and we'd have the radio on, and it was a middle of the road station, small town station, but they play a lot of pop, and I loved it, and I love big band, I love country, and all the R&B and doo-wop, which you're keeping alive. But God, it was just, so there's that kind of that connection that I had. My mom had told me about the chances that she and the places that she and my dad had gone to. They owned a couple of businesses. They were Firestone dealers, my dad and my grandpa. And then he worked for International Harvester. And, they'd have these big contests for dealers. And you get points, and you could win these fabulous trips. I mean, my parents, small-town people, very smart, native intelligence. People say, they judge as to whether you have a college education. I mean, that's BS, But they got to go all over the place. But they saw Tony Bennett in these excellent nightclubs, and wow, it just was fantastic. But I think the thing that people respond to in Tony Bennett, he's real. He knows who he is. I mean, he'd been through, he almost died. His wife was pounding on his chest. He was drowning in the bathtub. And she went in there and pounded on his chest and, brought him back. And he eventually sobered up. He reached out to his sons, and they helped him, get financially straightened around. And also, basically, I think Danny told him, just be who you are. He knew who he was. He did. And, the attempt at singing rock and roll was pretty pathetic, and it was painful for him. But, you and John saw that concert with Lady Gaga and Tony. It was his 95th birthday. They scheduled that. They went into their regular schedule on CBS and put that in there on Sunday night, last Sunday night after, a couple of days after he died. There's just something so special about him, and I would recommend you and other folks on Fresh Air last week. They ran three interviews that Terry did with him, 1982, 1991, and 1998. They're wonderful. I'm just kind of nonstop here, but Raleigh.
Are the interviews easily obtainable online? I mean, the archives
yes,
there?
Yes, they sure are. Okay. Yes, they are.
Great.
You can go to the Fresh Air website and you can hear them.
So, very good.
Yeah.
Good. All right, good thoughts.
Yay, Raleigh. I'm feeling better already.
Good deal. So. Thanks for calling.
Oh, you're welcome.
Appreciate
you have
it.
A good one.
All right, you too. So 888-876-5593 would be 8888 Raleigh. And Johnny is in Austin. What's happening tonight, Johnny? We lost Johnny? Oh, no. Don't tell me we've lost Johnny. Well, Stacy's in Algonquin. Have we lost her?
Oh, no. Hi, Raleigh.
Hey, Stacy. What's up?
Oh, I just wanted to call and say I love Tony Bennett, too.
Good.
And the one song, if you can play, I Left My Heart in San Francisco.
That's the one I won't play, and I'll tell you exactly why. When you hear all the obits and all that kind of stuff, that's what you're hearing in the background. So you can hear that in 100 different places. That's why it isn't appropriate that I add to it. And
what about when he sings Chicago?
No. I mean, these are the burnout songs. I was looking for the things that were the real, you know, legendary pop standard stuff. I'm really not going to entertain. You're the reason, by the way, I stopped taking requests. I have to admit it. When you wanted Islands in the Stream, I said, that's it. I am not taking another request unless it's R&B or doo-wop or something like that. So I don't want the mainstream stuff.
Oh, well, you can pick out. Remember when you were sending out gifts? So you sent me a CD with Tony Bennett and Frank Sinatra.
Oh, no, I'm sure. And those are what John does is he buys lots of CDs online. I have no idea what they are and just sends them out because we have to do prizes. But that's not reflective on anything that I would necessarily like or play on the air.
Oh, well, you could pick out a song that you like of Tony Bennett's.
Well, we've been doing that. We've been doing this for 3 days. I've got one more to go, and it's going to be Boulevard of Broken Dreams.
Oh.
Yeah. That's going to be it, because that'll be the last bumper for tonight.
Okay.
So then we're done with it. I'm not saying I'll never play another Tony Bennett record again. Of course, I might. But, I mean, in terms of a tribute and playing a lot of them, I wanted to spend the last 3 nights doing that. But that'll be it. And we played a lot of them.
Oh, what about an Alan Jackson?
No. We're never going to do that again. That's what I'm saying. Stacey, I got to get away from this. I need to get back to what we do, which is R&B, obscure soul, things like that, not like familiar country songs. You know, I would occasionally play a country song that I really liked that was fairly rare, like some of the Nat Stuckey stuff. But all the things you're requesting, you can go to YouTube anytime you want and hear them again and again and again. Every last one of them.
Well, how about, can you pick out a Scotty song?
Oh, yes, and I've been doing that, and I will do that next week. You betcha.
Okay.
All right. So you feeling all right? Are things going good?
Yeah, everything's good.
All right.
Everything's good.
Excellent. All right. Well, thank you for calling, and I'll get you a Scotty song next week, I promise.
Have a good weekend.
You too. All right.
Bye-bye.
Okay, bye. So 888-876-5593, 8888-Raleigh. And Johnny is back. All right, Johnny, he's back.
I'm sorry. I've been dealing with computers and stuff all day long. I had my mute button pushed so I could hear you, but you couldn't hear me. It was my technical goof.
Oh, all right. All right. I figured you gave up on me.
No. I've waited a long time before to talk to you, and I wouldn't stop now.
Oh, thank you.
Speaking of thank you, I want to thank you for all that you've done on this Tony Bennett for the past couple of days, because this was your chance to do it, and you didn't miss a beat.
Oh, well, thank you. And we played Firefly, which was your request, and a great one it was.
Yeah, you know, I was not a real fan of In the Middle of an Island, so I guess we can forget about that.
Yeah.
And that Boulevard of Broken Dreams is great.
Oh, it really is. Yeah, we're gigolo and gigolette. Yeah, I love that. Sing a song and dance along the Boulevard of Broken Dreams. Yeah.
So you did a lot of... you got a lot of good reaction on Tony Bennett, and some of your listeners actually filled in some of the information that we were looking to find out just a couple of nights ago, or maybe it was last night. Heck, I won't remember.
Exactly. No, we got a lot of information, and yeah, David in Long Beach, you sent me that article from Variety that really made it clear how his oldest son really navigated this, and good for him.
Well, lots of times, if you reach out and say, I need help, you'll get it.
Yes.
But you got to say it.
Yes. And mean it. You have to be willing to do the work yourself as well, which he was.
But I mean, what a beautiful bittersweet kind of life. I mean, I mean he was a very blessed man. He was.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. It was truly a life well lived, start to finish.
Oh, Wow. I'm glad that I got a chance to see that show and turn you on
to
it, because without that, maybe you wouldn't have ever seen it. I don't know.
I'm sure I never would have seen it, because I just
It was good timing, though.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm glad CBS reran it.
Well, yeah, me too, because until that night, I didn't even know it existed. On the subject of music, I got a double CD today I bought on Acrobat. It's a UK label, I believe, and it's a two-disc D. Clark CD released in 2022. Have you ever heard of this one?
I don't think so. I mean, it probably has all the stuff we've heard of, but is there anything on it that you're saying, I've never heard this song?
Well, there's a lot that I haven't heard before, but some of it I actually heard on your KJ radio station. I keep on all the time, and I find myself going to the radio a lot to say, what is that song? And I keep a pen and paper there, so I keep up with a lot of songs that are old but new to me. But so I heard you playing some D. Clark on there.
Yeah.
And so I saw this at a reasonable price on Amazon. It's called Raindrops, the Singles and Albums Collection, 1956 to 62.
Oh, wow, okay.
And there's a lot of cool stuff on here that I've never heard before, but here is the kind of a mystery. There is, on track 27, disc 1, Raindrops, and
uh-huh.
It's VJ number 383 from 1961,
uh-huh.
But it's not the Raindrops that I know. I mean, it's the same lyrics and everything, but it's like a different take. So my question is the Raindrops version we hear today the real original Raindrops?
Well, yeah, it is.
Because this one's not.
Well, that may be, but the one that we know, because it's so funny. I know where I was in 1961, and that thing was on a jukebox. And I heard it every day. And that's definitely the Raindrops that you hear on the oldie stations is the Raindrops that we were hearing in 1961.
This is VJ number 383. So was the original on VJ?
Oh, yeah. No, it was absolutely on VJ. And I think the record number was 383.
Well, it said so in the Whitburn book, for
yeah,
sure.
No.
So I don't know what they did. It's not a bad version. It's I've never heard this before.
Well, you know, that's one of the problems with CDs, because I doubt that Raindrops was a one-take session. And so it could have been an alternate take on that session. It also could have been something that he sung later, because, you know, a lot of times there'd be re-sings. I mean, hell, we remember all those record labels that's all they did was re-sings. So, it gets down to when you hear one, especially if you hear a re-sing you like, then trying to figure out where is this from? Because you look at the record and you say, it's not that, you know, you look at the 45 and say, nope, that's not it. And sometimes they're hard to find.
I know. I had a couple of other notes here. We were talking about New Orleans radio the other night,
yeah.
And I ran into I put in Papa Stoppa on a search engine and ran into a website you probably know of called New Orleans Radio Shrine.
Oh, of course, of course, yeah.
Guy named Bob Walker.
Oh, yes, from WNOE. Yes, absolutely. He keeps that alive.
That's a nice site there, and I heard a little bit of air check of Papa Stoppa. I guess it was the last
yeah,
one.
Clarence.
I can't remember his real name.
Clarence. Clarence Hammond.
Yeah. Right,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah. But yeah, there's stuff with Yat Radio, Where Yat, and all that. So yeah, it's a good a good site. There's all sorts of things on that site, and all sorts of memories. You know, Jack the Cat is big on that site, and he was.
Yeah, I've never heard of Jack the Cat before.
Big deal, and a lot of people on that. That's fun too.
Did you listen to a lot of New Orleans radio?
Yeah, I listened to quite a bit of it.
Well, so the WBOK's competition was what was it?
Wild, yeah, Roundsville. Yeah, so that's where Robert Roundsville and our friends at the OK Group competed head to head.
Who was the winner? Was BOK a secondary
You know,
no, well, they were not a daytimer, but no. The other one wasn't a daytimer either.
Exactly, no, huh? But you know, I don't want to say that one of them was necessarily bigger than the other as far as that goes. I mean, you're talking about two soul stations, both owned by, you know, by white folks, and both of which did well in the market. But I think some people had one favorite over the other. But years later, of course, YLD was bought and was African-American owned. And they, when, what's his name? I'm trying to think of it right now. But he had Yet, but he also had the FM station, the one that moved in from Slidell. Oh, hell, what is his name? He was the mayor of Kenner, for God's sakes, and he was an Endemian. Well, anyway, he owned the station that they had, which is a great soul station, and YLD went to all their advertisers and said, don't buy them because they're white-owned. And it was just it was just horrible. But Eddie Muniz, that was his name. Eddie Muniz owned the station, and he owned, the station was big. Hang on a minute. Don't go away. Stay right where you are.
Okay.
John said, stop talking right this minute, so I will on WGN Radio. All right. Well, maybe I won't. So are you there? I guess I just won't. All right, I'll just keep talking. So
okay.
I thought that Adam was there, and I thought I was supposed to do something else, but John's looking at me, and we're both saying, oh, well, so I'll just keep talking. And
we got a little more time.
Well, that's right. That's absolutely right. But yeah, the Station Barry Richards program, why can't I think of the call letters on FM? Like I said, it was a move-in from Slidell, and YLD really went after him that way, you know, playing the race card, which was unfortunate.
Well, which R&B station came first in New Orleans? Was it BOK or the WYLD?
Well, I believe now YLD was came after MRY. YLD came from Mary, from MRY. I would say, I would guess Wild within a month or two, but you know, this is terrible. I did a New Orleans radio profile. I have all this history that I've got, and I just need to look it up, I guess. God knows I compiled it. My recollection is it was months of one another, and I want to put Wild first, but maybe not, so now I got to go look it up.
Okay, well, don't stress about it. I got one other thing here, that James Brown, Lynn Collins, great song, What My Baby Needs Now is a Little More Lovin'.
Yes, I've played it.
I know it, but Bobby Womack's got a song that sounds like that. Have you ever heard it? It's called, I think it's in French, Comme l'amour?
I don't know.
C-O-M-E-L-A-M-O-R-E.
Okay.
It wasn't a single. It was an album track by Bobby Womack, and it sounds to this tune of What My Baby Needs Now is a Little More Love.
Okay. I'm gonna look for this. Email me that information, and I will go search for it. And I think that they're now ready to pay bills on WGN. So thank you for calling. Thank you. Have a great evening. All right, appreciate it.
Morning.
Yes,
okay.
One of those things. And always always glad to have Johnny save me. And you too as well. Now, tomorrow night's a replay of Monday Night Trivia. We'll be back at it Monday night live, 10 o'clock Central. Until then, well, that's a wrap. We thank Adam for keeping us on the air and John for screening your calls and the hearty few of you that called. Much appreciated. Looking forward to trivia coming up in a few days right here. I'm Raleigh James. It's WGN Radio.